I would like to remind you that for more Microsoft webcasts, you can go to microsoft.com/webcasts. Thanks again for joining us for today's MSDN webcast, Geek Speak, What You May Not Know About the Visual Studio Team System 2008 with Mike Vincent. Now it is my pleasure to introduce today's first presenter, Lynn Langett. Lynn, you now have the floor.
Thank you very much. Hi, welcome everyone who's listening in to today's edition of MSDN Geek Speak. Thanks for joining us. We've got a great show coming up with a great guest, Mike Vincent. But before we do that, a little bit about your co-host today. For those of you who've never listened into a Geek Speak, it's a different kind of format. It's question-driven. So we don't have a bunch of PowerPoint. We don't have a bunch of scripting. We're really here to answer questions that you have. So throughout the presentation, please type questions into the queue, and Nathan and I will pass them along to our guest. Before we do that, though, you can see a little bit of information about us, and I want to just say hello and a warm Southern California welcome to my friend Mathun. How's it going, Mathun?
Hey, Lynn. It's going great. Hello, Mike. This should be a fun show. And Lynn, congratulations. You got your book published today, huh?
I did. It was a big effort, but yes, today, February 4th, Smart Business Intelligence Solutions with SQL Server 2008 is available on all major venues for purchase. And I'm very happy to say that there will also shortly be a 33-part How Do I BI screencast series available for you to use and look at as a companion to the book. The landing pages are being built on MSDN and TechNet as we speak, so there'll be stuff going on my blog. So thanks. So what's going on in your world, Mathun?
Nothing much. There's a TechReady going on here, and I'm also putting together a lot of Firestarter events. For those of you who are familiar with Firestarter events, it's a one-day deep dive into a particular technology. We'll have Internet Explorer 8 for developers and IT Pro coming up soon, and then also Silverlight 3.
Great. And those are going to be live streamed for people who don't live in Seattle as well, right?
Yes. So there'll be two components. The in-person event will be happening in the Microsoft Conference Center in Redmond. We'll also be live telecasting the whole event on the web via live meeting and live video streams.
As well as recording for those who can't attend.
Yep, for on-demand watching. Yes.
Wonderful. All right. Well, we could talk about stuff we're doing all day because that's what we do, but we're not here to do that. So we have a great guest who's been with us before and somebody I'd consider a good friend lives down in my area. So welcome to Mike. Why don't you say hi and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Hi, everyone. My name's Mike Vincent, and I've been focusing on the community for more years than I care to think about now. So I'm very involved from that side. I've been doing development for over 20 years. In addition to that, I was a marketing director and doing engineering development and so forth, like structural engineering. But anyway, where my focus is now is primarily on application lifecycle management and Visual Studio Team Systems. So that brings us to what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, great. So today's topic is Visual Studio Team System 2008, and what you don't know about it, what you want to know about it, why you care about it, and really everything around the world of Visual Studio Team System. So to kind of kick us off, Mike, you have a number of things that you want to talk about and show. Do you want to maybe give a little structure or a little introduction to what you want to talk about?
I sure do. As people may have seen from the little blurb, talking about the Geek Speak presentation today, I want to start from the premise that Visual Studio Team System, it's really a good investment for these tough economic times that we're in. And we'll go into some details about maybe why that's the case, and maybe to give some of our listeners maybe some ammunition to go back and maybe justify the investment within their organization if they're not already using Team System, or if they are, how to broaden it to get the more broad organization working all together towards trying to do things efficiently and effectively, and really, really key with that, avoid failed projects.
Yeah, huh. What percent of there? I know because when I used to teach this stuff, there's some organization that monitors software projects. What percent of projects from your most current data are either don't succeed at all, so fail, or are late or not on budget? Because I know I have a number, but you probably have something more current.
I probably don't, because I don't really follow too many of those statistics directly. But I would say that roughly half of projects are probably a failure in one way, shape, or a form or another.
I think it's even higher. Actually, I think it was around 70%.
I was trying to be conservative.
Yeah. It was like 25% were out and out failures, and then you know, the total was 75% did something, but they weren't on time and weren't on budget and or weren't to spec. Which is, you know, if you think about that, if it was any other industry, like, you know, I don't know, transportation safety or law enforcement or something, like, we're going to have a 25% success rate. Give us the money. You know, that wouldn't be a good bet.
Yeah, right.
So in order to get kind of going on this, do you want to share out your desktop and maybe show us a couple of things so we can get some questions?
Yeah, let's get started on that slide here. So,
okay.
Yeah, you have the great ROI calculator. Will you be talking about that, Mike?
What's that?
The ROI calculator.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be talking about that real quickly here.
Awesome.
And let me see if I can share my desktop. And
while Mike's doing that, I see we have our first question here. It says, what do you think about the Smart Client Software Factory? Is it a challenge to understand and use? And is this related to Visual Studio Team System in any way? So I think he's talking sort of more generally about patterns and practices and some of these factory patterns that are made available. Does this integrate into Team System? Does Team System, you know, help with this? Is there any connection?
Oh, absolutely integrates with the Team System. Basically, anything that you would be doing from a development perspective will work with it that way. There's specifics, though. That there's not a whole lot of, I guess, what I would say is the other tie-in. It's just a matter of determining which kinds of applications you're developing. I mean, you can be doing for clients, you can be doing web, you can be just doing service. Really doesn't matter. Matter of fact, you don't even have to be doing .NET development, although that's what we want you to be doing, but you could be doing Java development and still use Team System. So I hope that's giving you some answers.
Yeah, I think so. Andre has a follow-on here. He says, can I use SQL Compact 3.5 SP1 in Visual Studio Database Edition?
I'm going to have to check into that.
Yeah, I don't know either. Mathune, do you know?
Yeah, but I don't want to give you a specific answer without research.
Okay, we'll research that and get back to you, Andre. Good question.
Good question.
And we'll post that on the MSDN GeekSpeak blog. We post post-show resources in general there, and Mike has already pulled together a huge amount for us, and we'll add that to it. So go ahead, Mike.
Okay. I'm going to start off. I'm showing you some of the various process templates here as I'm talking and just kind of clicking through some of these. But I'll start with the whole idea that Team System is a good investment. And the way that you make it a good investment is not just focusing on development and source control. Certainly, those are very important. As a matter of fact, we're going to touch on the three basic pillars, which are our work items, source control, and build. But we need to get a broader perspective in terms of the value of Team System to the whole organization. That's how you get your entire organization involved. So we're starting really from our business stakeholders and from our project management folks. And we've got to get involved in working through the processes. And then, of course, we have the development and we have release. And what we're really trying to look at is to manage the entire application lifecycle, not just focusing on the development process of trying to get a new project out. So what we're looking at is we're trying to have maintainability in our applications. We're trying to make sure that we're really meeting what the user's requirements are, and there are certain ways that we can approach doing that. But let's back up for a step more, because we're in an economically challenged times right now. And recent article in a business or a IT publication that I was reading was talking about where CIOs are going in terms of projects in today's environment. And what's happening is that there actually is good investment still in the IT area. But what's happening is the kind of projects that people are focusing on are changing. We're really trying to look at shorter projects that have more bang for the buck. And that involves really, really going back and working closely with our organization, with our business stakeholders, to define and refine what projects can really make economic core sense for our environment today. And so we're looking at short wins, short iterations. They're pulling back from a lot of long-term projects and looking at what we can do to win very quickly and efficiently. So I think Team System can really help us a lot there. So with that, let's look at some of the ways that it works. As on the screen right now, you should see that I've got the MSF Agile template up here. And that's one of the things that comes out of the box. And it's actually a very, very good process for many projects in that it's what I call lightweight agile. It's not getting into extreme programming. We're going to talk about Scrum a little bit today, too. But
I hate to interrupt, but I see a question here that's kind of right along what you're saying. One of our listeners is asking, what type of methodologies are supported? Agile, Scrum, XP, and he's asking specifically about a methodology called EVO, and he's asking if that's supported. And I know obviously that Agile is, but I'm personally not familiar with EVO. Are you?
No, I'm not specifically, but there are many third-party people who have developed templates to work with Team System. I'm showing the CMMI right now, and I'm flipping to a Scrum template, but there are many, many others out there. And I would just do a live search on those and see what you can come up with.
Well, plus, aren't all the templates are customizable as well?
Absolutely, they are. Yes.
Yeah. So, because I know in my work, because I actually use this, I use Team System for my personal charity work over in Zambia. And we've done a pretty, well, not extensive, we've done some template customization. And, you know, it's to me, it's one of the great features of Team System.
Well, yeah, and actually the out-of-the-box templates, both the CMMI and the Agile MSF templates, are really designed as starter templates by which organizations can then further customize those for their specific needs. And what I'm showing you off on the toolbar now is I have the power tools loaded on here, and I'll talk a little bit more in detail about that a little bit later. But one of the things that comes with the power tools is a process editor. And so here's how you bring it up once the power tools are installed over here. And let me change this. And oops, I'm sorry, I can't do this because I unpublished the process that I had. But basically, what I will be doing here is bringing back to another process that I've exported first. So what you do is you start with, you take your basic process, whether it's Scrum, whether it's Agile, whether it's MMI, and you export that to your file system. Then you go back in, you can open it up from your file system with the process editor, and you can then edit it, making changes. You can add new things like work items. You can add all kinds of new custom data types. We recently did something with one of our clients, which was to put a front end on the Scrum process. And what's called it, take a little liberty here with that client, but what they call it is voice of the customer. And so what that's doing is that's the front end to our product backlog as we get into the formal process. And with that into the template, and that's going to lead me into something else, but I'll take questions as we go here too. To a couple of other things here that I wanted to touch on, and that is the Web Access. There's two types of Web Access that are now available. Again, this is just going to be downloaded here. The regular Team System Web Access, which by default would be on VSTS 8090, or basically your server name, port 8090. And we also have another version out here that hits on 8091. And that's a limited version that's going to let us look at just work items. So let's take a second here for this to spin up. But the benefit out of this work item access is this is free. This does not require a client access license for people to access your system. It's limited in terms of what people can do, but they can add new things, which will become work items, and they can monitor those. And that's part of the idea, so that we have a front end so that the business stakeholders can actually contribute to the process actively and be able to follow it through. We could also just log bugs in here.
That's a great money-saving feature. That's awesome.
And that was part of Microsoft listening to all of you out there, or what you didn't like with 2005. Access licenses wouldn't get our customers involved because of the cost. Well, Microsoft has responded to that, and I think we're going to continue to see that get better as we move on with future versions as well.
Cool. Awesome. So in these challenging economic times, this is obviously a big ticket item, and you know, you talked about money saving. So pedal hits the metal. You're out there with the client. They're saying, you know, why? How is this going to save me money? What's the elevator pitch? Because, you know, all of the people listening in, if they don't have the luxury of having Team System, I mean, this is a tough time to bring something like this into the enterprise, so you're going to have a pretty compelling argument. So what do you say?
Well, first of all, how much is it really cost for most failed products? I maintain that at the cost of one failed project, you can easily justify the investment in Team System. And that's going to be something that's going to pay off over and over and over again. Now, let's do some more formal numbers, because your CIOs and your CFOs are going to want to see some numbers that they can really justify. Here is a tool that, let me get better linked to the name of this. If you want to record, want to note this down, it's www.msftroi.com. That would be the site that I'm actually showing here from Nuclear Research. And if I scroll down about halfway through this, I can see Visual Studio System. And here are a number of items that you can work with for ROI calculation. Here's a modeling tool, and then there are several case studies, and these will help you really get to the real numbers of, okay, what's it going to cost me in my server investment? What's it going to cost me my desktop investment? What's it going to cost me in terms of training to get started up? All of these factors that you've got to consider. What's my ongoing licensing cost, all this type of stuff. And that's all built into this ROI model, and you'll be able to see in terms of dollars and cents what you're really looking at. And again, I would say balance that across the real cost of a failed project when you're going to look at how many employee man hours, consulting man hours, that you're going to be wasting if a project fails.
So VSTS has so many parts and pieces and versions, and one of the things we hear from customers all the time is it's difficult for them to understand what parts and pieces. And this isn't a licensing webcast, but is there something that you use that has been helpful for you? I mean, I know you've been working with it so long that you're probably comfortable now with all the different parts and pieces, but that's a really common thing that we hear.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'm interested. Yeah, I see it. but I don't know, like, which thing I need for what. Is there some quick guide that you use that maybe will be helpful for the people watching or listening?
I don't right off my head have a quick link for you, but I'll be glad to follow up with that for sure. By and large, an installation for more than 5 users is going to be involved with a Team Foundation server, and the majority, I think, of your clients are going to be working with the Team Developer. And by the way, if you don't know, Team Developer now includes the DataDude module that used to be a separate SKU. And those have been merged together now, so at price of one, you're going to get both development and data. And again, that's Microsoft listening to the customers, and most developers are actually working hands-on with data as well in the development process. So let's make those all one item at this point.
And not to digress, but if any of our viewers are already subscribing to the MSDN Flash, we had just published, I think, it was our previous edition, is that right, Lynn?
Yeah.
We had an offer going on VSTS. It was a buy one, get one free license or something like that. I can't remember off my head, but just look for the MSDN Flash articles, and there was an offer in that.
Sounds like a super deal.
It was indeed.
Yeah. And then we can do an awful lot with video professional, but you do have some limitations in terms of kind of testing and so forth that you can do. So it's not as full featured as the development version. But again, for trying to be cost, you can start to work with professional and get an awful lot done that way.
One of the things, too, I want to tell our listeners is that because of the complexity of the product, we actually have people in each region who are called developer tools specialists, and their job is to explain to customers what the different editions are and to come to your site and to do demos and that kind of stuff. So we have an entire person in each area. I know we have one for Southern California. I know there's one for Northern California. So if any
and
of you,
two in Seattle.
Yeah, if any of you are listening and you're saying, boy, I don't have time to look into all that, well, we have people to help with that. It's just a question that you understand that this is more than source control, that you understand the capabilities of it. So because it's a big product.
Yeah, and just shoot us the mail, and we'll be happy to get them in touch with
you
and get you guys integrated with them.
Yeah.
And
matter of fact, I'm even trying to work with some of these people to do Microsoft clients to do like we call a lunch and learn session, where we'll actually get clients together, their development group, and have lunch and go through do an hour or two presentation on Team System with them.
Awesome. There's a question waiting. The question is, can VS Team System be used to design object oriented Can Visual Studio Team System be used to object-oriented design using UML, creating class and sequence diagrams?
Yes, and hold on for Visual Studio 2010, because that's a very, very big part of what's coming in this next version.
And the follow-up to that question is, could we do the reverse engineering using VSTS as well? Basically, what he means is, how do we go about creating class diagrams and sequence diagrams? Are you doing a demo on that? Or?
Actually, yes. In San Francisco, later this month at the
NDC,
the developer NDC, as we call it, which is the front end on VS Live, I will be doing a lap around Visual Studio 2010. And that's one of the things that we're going to go in depth on. Two big areas that we're focusing on is the architecture and then the test area. In the architecture area, we actually will be doing some of that reverse engineering, actually even in the demo that I'm providing.
Great. And since it occurs to me that some of the people that are listening in might actually not be super familiar with VSTS, maybe you could just do a 5-minute sort of okay, this is what it is, this is how it integrates, this is what these folders and items are, just in case some of the people who are listening have not worked with VSTS before, because it's probably not fair of us to make an assumption that everybody has.
Yeah, let me do that, and that's going to be a good lead-in to some of the other things
that
I want to cover, too, because I want to get into testing, I want to get into build, I want to get into continuous integration here before we run out of time. Okay, so as you see on my desktop, system installed, you see instead of just the Solution Explorer in Visual Studio, I also have the Team Explorer. And for those projects that are actually registered with Team System, I'm just going to say here if I want to bring this up just so you can kind of see what's going on. And I've got properties down here. Let's see if I had an existing team project. You can see all the projects that I've got up right now already have registered. But if I had another project that I wanted to bring in and import into Team System, all I have to do is start it from here. And here's my Team Foundation server by which we're based. In this, with the various projects, we have things like work items, which is really, really one of the cornerstones to Team System. And so I'll need to focus on that here in just a moment. We have reports. There's a ton of reports that come to the system. And we have things like builds. And depending on how the project is set up, of course, we want to talk about test-driven development. So we may have test projects as well that have with us. So let's kind of start here in going in a little bit more in depth, and I just want to touch on work items. Now, I'm using a Scrum template, and the various templates, as you install them, if I go in here to Team, and the type of work items that are going to be displayed are going to be those that are defined by the templates I'm using. So I would see something a bit different if I was using MSF Agile or MSF CMMI, for example.
You know, maybe it's just me, but sprint is a leisure activity in my world. I'm a runner. I don't know. It just popped into my head. I should just be quiet as you talk.
Lynn, we thought you were a geek.
Yeah. Actually, what we're finding is many of our clients are adopting Scrum as a methodology, and they're finding it very, very successful. What is important with this, though, is you have to get your extended organization focused on what to expect from Scrum or what to expect from Agile as opposed to, say, CMMI. And some organizations that have come from a waterfall process, this is a tough thing to work around. But what we found is, given a little bit of flexibility in terms of getting the executives and getting the business stakeholders to work with this process for a little bit, we'll find that we actually deliver working software in increments called iterations on a frequent and consistent basis. And over a bit of time, this really ended up being the selling factor. You're actually producing stuff that works, that your customers can or end users can give you feedback on, and you're getting that feedback as early in the process as possible so that you make sure the course.
We have a kind of a good question related to what work items here in the queue. It says, have you worked with the Artiso Work Item Manager? We've been using it, and it provides hierarchical views on work items, and it exports cleanly to MS Project. Are there similar tools or better tools? So he's looking for hierarchical views on work items.
I have not. I've heard of that, but I haven't had a chance to get my hands onto it. And matter of fact, I need to make a note for myself to do that stuff. But I'm not familiar with a whole, I guess, array of tools to be able to do that. But if you're having success, I think that's well for it right there.
Yeah, this could be my ignorance, but doesn't the information in TFS build an OLAP cube at some point so you can take a
look? Yes, it does.
Okay,
yeah.
So I don't know the structure of the cube, but of course cubes have hierarchical dimensions. So,
yeah.
I mean, my inclination would be that if it's not there, as long as the work items are in the cube, that shouldn't be too difficult to create a report because that's what cubes do. So we'll do a bit more research. Great question from Ian. But I can see where that would be something you'd want. So great question.
It is. Okay. As we were talking over here, I said to the show kind of what the work items look like. And those will vary, again, like I said, based on the template that you're using. From work items, which are very important, everything that you're doing in the team system process should flow from your requirements to individual, actually down to the point where you create individual work items. And from those work items, we need to really take an approach on things, and that's called test-driven development. I don't know how many people that are listening are actively using TDD. But if you're not, I would really encourage you to get started with it because it's a very, very key component to raising the quality of your overall software and making sure that you're going to stay on target to the requirements that you have. We could go through and at some time do an entire session on test and development quite easily, but what I want to do is just make the point that in order to use some of the other features that are included out of the box with Visual Studio Team System 2008, such as list integration, we really need to take a test-driven development approach. And so what that amounts to is before you actually start coding, you actually want to write your tests, and you want to have your tests exercise as many of the possible ways that your component is going to have to respond as possible. Now, sometimes that can get very, very difficult. A really cool product from Microsoft Research called PEX, you may want to check that out. You can actually add that into Team System, and that will actually go through and analyze your code and generate some really killer unit test work.
Actually, I have to jump in there because I've been playing with PEX, and
yeah.
Although it does integrate a team system, and that would be the ultimate, if you wanted to just get started with PEX, you can download it, and it integrates directly with Visual Studio. So it's a killer application, and I highly recommend that you take a look at it. We'll get you the link to it. It's PEX.
Yeah. Thanks, Lynn. I appreciate that.
Sure.
And Andrew,
yeah.
I have a question. Are you going to talk about MVC Sharp?
Not really. Hadn't planned on it yet.
No problem.
Okay. From test-driven development, now where is this leading me? And if you're not doing test-driven development, get started, and you can do it in a lightweight fashion by building your tests at least in the same session that you're writing your code. If you're finding it hard to make the transition to writing your tests first, at least write it in the same session that you're doing your code so that you know that you've got it there. What happens then is as measurements are refined, you're going to refine your unit test. But those are going to be key to making sure that any changes that you make are actually still going to meet your requirements. With TDD, you write test, you have a red condition because you're going to fail your unit test. You create code and satisfy the requirements such that it's green so that it will pass the test, and then you want to refine that. Then let's say that you want to look at this new thing called continuous integration that has come out with Team System 2008. And what that is that allows you to check in. When you check in code, you're going to fire off a build. And the value of that is I can run a lot of tests on that build, and I know that I haven't broken the application if I'm going to be able to build successfully. And the earlier the tech that we get, the better it is. So that's what that is all about. What we're doing with that, though, is without doing good unit tests, you really don't have continuous integration. You have what I mean to is compilation, which doesn't buy you very much. So you've got to have the tests so that you can get the reports, you can get the feedback in terms of how well you're doing.
Cool.
Okay. Let me see here. I'm kind of all over the place as I'm talking here. But now, some things that you want to look at, and I'm just talking here, but I can go into code here a little bit if we need to.
Yeah, you need to. We're a geek show.
Yeah.
Mike works in the architect space, and we always give architects a hard time that they just show PowerPoint and don't show any code. So
yeah.
we're making him work for his living today. He has to come back to the developer world.
Yeah, it's not doing too bad. Anyway, I have a little application over here that is from a fictitious World Cup soccer event called the Ticket Manager. And within this, I want to do a quick build, and I want to actually run some tests. And some of the things that I can do within this let me see, where am I at? I get on doing these presentations, but I always cut to where I'm sitting, so sorry. Bear with me for a moment.
Yeah, it's all right. We can see PEX at the top of your menu integrated there.
Yeah, it's PEX. It's in there.
Yeah. Well, as you're getting situated there, one other thing that our listeners might want to check out from Microsoft Research is something called StackSharp, which is a contract language based on Eiffel, and it also is an interesting integration into Visual Studio or Visual Studio Team system. Works with C#, and it allows you to define contracts in your methods. So, and PEX is designed to work with that to then verify those contracts. So that's kind of how I came into the world of PEX. This is a little bit different than maybe what you did. So, all right, go ahead.
Good. Okay. Anyhow, so I'm going to go from the menu over here, and I'm going to run all these tests. And I want to see how they're going to perform. So we're building this solution, and I can see, okay, that this thing passed. So I'm doing my build. Okay. And I wanted to show my results at this. So this is always important when you actually do a build. If I had any errors or any issues that came up, they should be showing here. There's other things that I can do, such as execute some other tests and so forth when I actually do my build. So actually I'm showing unit tests over here, but I can fire those off automatically when I'm doing builds. And when I'm doing those, let me jump into the build part of it for a moment. And so we can see what this is going to be looking like. And so if I had a fail, here's kind of what I might be looking like in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, in those builds, though, we can define what it is that we want to do. So we have a very large scripting capability in MS Build, and we're going to set up our build server. In this case here, I have it set up in my VM, but in a production sense, you want to have a separate build server that can be set up that you're going to actually be able to build from so that you're not taking load off of your Team Foundation server. And this stuff here can all work in the background, and you're going to be able to register, back in terms of creating alerts if I have a failed build, if I have a successful build, if there's other issues, that things that need to be reported to people every time these things run.
Now, just to be clear on that last point, although most teams will have a separate build server. When you have really, really small teams, is it required to have a separate build server?
No.
If you had only three to five people? Yeah, because that's the way we're running it in the project in Africa. We have it all on one. So, again, from a cost standpoint, if you have a very small team, you can get the visibility into your project and the efficiency on a single server. And I think that's important because, this product is not just designed for huge, massive teams. It certainly will support that, but it also can scale
right.
down.
Yeah. So if you're working with MSDN subscription that gives you the 5 users, when you set it up, make sure that you install Team System with your ID, not the test setup ID, as the documentation tells you, because otherwise you're going to burn one of those 5 licenses.
That's a great tip.
So it's a real cheap tip there for people that are running on limited budgets. Also, again, you're going to be overstressing the server, doing a lot of builds and so forth with a small system like that. The Team System will handle a couple hundred developers before you even need to consider scaling out into additional machines. But the other part of it is that builds can start to stress things if you're doing a lot of them and if you've got a pretty good-sized team. So you can actually front-end the build even with a proxy server, so that's going to minimize your network traffic that's going to go on.
Yeah.
Little hint.
And that's a good tip. Yeah, that's a good tip. And that's pretty well documented. It's not the simplest thing in the world, but it is pretty well documented because it's been around for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so different things that I can do in my build as I'm defining it is, I first of all define the build, and if I'm going to create a new build, I want to just use the wizard with it. So if I'm a new build definition, I'm going to start off with this. I've got these different items here that I need to go through, and some of them are required, so it's you see the little warning triangle on those. And I create the build. Now, what the key thing is, I'm stopping here on trigger because I want to show you. If you're going to do continuous integration, that's what's immediately checked up here. On check-ins, I want to uncheck this and build on each check-in. Or, more realistically, if I've got a few developers doing things, I probably want to queue things up for a few minutes. So I'm probably going to say maybe I'm going to queue this up and fire a build off every 15 minutes. That way the thing's not going crazy at the end of the day when everybody's doing check-ins. What we do want to encourage people to do, though, is check in your code. Do it frequently, and the feedback that we're going to get from doing continuous integration is going to really provide a great deal of value to you. Give you immediate feedback so that things are not sitting there 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month later when you don't remember what it is that you were doing. You want to find out right now, it's fresh in your mind so you can deal with it.
Mike, do you have any thoughts on Microsoft's TileCop? Have you used it?
On which one?
On Microsoft's TileCop.
No, I haven't. I really don't have an opinion at this point.
Okay.
Is that the same thing as FXCOP, or is that something different? StyleCOP. I'm being ignorant here. Is it the same thing?
I am not sure. I've used FXCOP a while ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I've used FXCOP too. Do you know Mike?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not sure because of the name of it.
Okay,
yeah, I've used FXCOP.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So Ian, who's asking the question, if you can clarify if you mean something different than FXCOP. Okay?
Mm-hmm. But as we want to do things like when we're running our builds, we want to be able to do, basically it comes under the general heading of code analysis. So that's what you're talking about when we're talking about FXCOP, and I'm presuming what he's talking about
mm-hmm.
as well. And we do want to enable code analysis. You can set up code analysis so that it's going to be required on check-in, or if we find that that's a little bit onerous for developers, you can actually run that when it actually does the continuous integration builds. Now, if you're using continuous integration, then you still want to set up things like night builds so that run additional tests that you're not getting just on the check-ins. And you want to have probably a whole hierarchy of tests. You're going to be able to do QA tests that will go into a dedicated QA environment, for example. And by the way, virtual machines are great for this. And I'm going to actually working on a blog posting here talking about lab management. And
talking about blog posts, Ian just got back and said, like, StyleCop is completely different than FXCop, and he pointed us to the blog, blog.msgn.com/source-analysis.
Okay, I will take a look. Yeah, I appreciate it. Okay. Then certainly, you know, we want to be able to build out, and we have the ability to do things like web tests and load tests and so forth, you know, more sophisticated. Those are not ones that you're going to do on continuous integration check-in by any means. That's a much more sophisticated environment. But for these other environments, such as QA, such as user acceptance testing and so forth, I'm going to bring it actually on a posting that I hope to have done tonight on the topic of lab management, which uses virtual machines to actually build up these environments very rapidly. And when we get beyond just a simple application, so that if we have a fairly complex multi-tier application, that we're able to actually build that out and do our sophisticated tests fairly rapidly. Again, the idea is to get feedback back to our customers, our business stakeholders, and to our developers as quickly as we can. Let's see, is it any other questions? I want to jump into reporting here real quick. Okay. Yes. Let me bring up. I need to do a PowerPoint on this. I'm sorry, guys, because I want to show some different.
He's an architect. He can't help it.
I know,
we call them, but you know, architects, yeah. They don't listen to developer types, you know,
yeah.
we just can't stop them. So we're only letting them do one, okay?
Yeah, so we're going to quickly run through some reports. The reason is that I want to show you some different kinds of styles of reports so that you're able to read things fairly quickly. Certainly, when you do builds, you want to take a look at the build reports and learn what's going on from those. Heck with this building here. Okay, so we're going to look at the rest of the value that we're going to get reports as we start to go through it. Here's one that's really kind of apparent to you. It's scope creep. So one of my active requirements, keep building as fast or faster than my development is going on. That's not a good sign. We've got some things in terms of quality indicators here. We're going to look at things like code churn, code coverage, and how good are our tests doing. So are they failing? Are they passing? So that's what we're looking at here. I want to be concerned about excessive code churn because that means I'm opening and reopening things more frequently than maybe I have to. It means maybe I'm not testing things well enough to get it figured out, or maybe my requirements are not locked down quite tight enough so that I've got to lock the requirements down and write some more unit tests to cover those. Different things that we might be seeing here.
You know, all joking aside, obviously this is one of the huge value props of Team System. And again, just in the little use that I've had in this project in Africa, it's been just dramatic. And I think it's been real interesting because it's been sort of a typical kind of startup where we had a really small team and we had a lot of pushback as to this would add excessive overhead. And in fact, it did just what it was supposed to do. It gave us visibility into the project and improved the quality dramatically.
Yeah. So actually, you're seeing a good turnout. Hopefully, you're using an agile process so that at the end of each iteration, and you're actually delivering working software so that your users can actually see the benefit they're getting out of it.
And we have a question here. What is the metric for code churn?
what we're looking at is when I have to reopen code that I've already, hopefully I've resolved something with, and then I need to reopen it again. So if I'm continuing to have to go in and open up a class and make changes in it because I'm trying to deal with bug issues, for example, means that there's probably something either there's an inefficiency going on someplace, and then you have to dig further in terms of determining where is that inefficiency landing.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a little bit general, but I hope that's giving the answer he's looking for.
Great. Okay.
Okay. Project velocity. So what I'm trying to do is compare resolved and close rates. So a resolved means the developer fixed an issue, so he considers it resolved, but until it's been through test and fully validated, it hasn't been closed. Okay, this is always what's kind of like the tale, are we done yet, are we done yet? how far can we get in the little time that we have? So this is what this is showing you here. This is actually a pretty good looking graph here.
Mm-hmm.
Work plan, what's completed, and looks like I'm getting completed on time. So that's cool. now, how good is it? What requirements haven't been tested? This is really where we have to lean back and look at code coverage to determine what have we done and what haven't we done. I should have gone in and showed an example here, but I'm kind of running short on time now to show in Team System with the testing what we've covered and what we haven't covered in our code. And it'll actually show you by green or red or inconclusive. And you actually get to see that in color in your IDE. So here we can see how we've gone through and tracking the progression here of untested and to passed by each successive build that we've done.
Okay, while you're doing this, I can see that we have a couple of questions around evidence. So one of the questions is this project used internally in any major projects? Could you share some statistics? And it is. We actually use it to build Windows. So is that
mm-hmm.
major enough for you? We use it to build Office. And we do have some case studies. So
yes.
The person who's asking that, if you can send an email to lynnl@microsoft.com, and then I'll get you that evidence. And then the other question that I'm seeing is, what is the minimal cost for a small 2 to 3 developer environment? And that's the question that we're going to hook you up with the developer tools specialist, because Mathun and I we're not licensing specialists, so we want to give you the correct information. So if you have licensing or evidence questions, send email directly to us, and we will and tell us where you live, what geographic area of the country or the world, and we will connect you. And my email is lynnl@microsoft.com. Okay.
And mine is mithund, mithund for David, @microsoft.com.
Yeah. So, yeah, because we want to make sure that you get the correct answers and the evidence that you're looking for. So,
and Lynn, do you know if TFS is part of BizSpark?
I don't know that.
Mike, any idea?
Is it part of BizTalk? No.
BizSpark.
BizSpark.
Oh, BizSpark. No, I do not know the answer to that.
Yeah, that's one for us to find out. BizSpark, for those of you listening, is a new program we have for startups that gives you access to all of our software as a startup for 3 years until you hit a certain revenue number. So if you're interested, Microsoft.com/BizSpark. Actually, we could just go and look because it's listed there.
I think it is, but don't.
I'm not going to say without looking. I don't want to be quoted incorrectly.
Right.
And recorded.
Yes. So all right. So you're showing. Come on now.
How good is our outsourcing crew doing here? Trying to look in terms of. Coverage, code churn, active bugs, things like that, so we can do reports like that. Here's something of what it might look like for underestimating our project is that we're just not getting up there.
Oh, that's
great. We're making progress, but we're just not getting it done in time.
That's the, I have to go have a drink slide.
Yeah, we got some big bulges over here in terms of trying to get things resolved.
Yeah.
And finally, we may have some loose development practices so that we've got a lot of reactivated stuff or not reactivated problems that are going on, so our faults.
Okay, so we've got a question in the queue. One of our listeners is sharing a great team system podcast. It's www.radiotfs.com. So thanks for sharing that, Ian. Everybody listening, radiotfs.com, and we'll make sure that we get that as part of the post-show resources. And one of our helpful listeners went out and looked at the BizSpark site, and he's telling us that it is on the BizSpark site. So I know this listener quite well, and if he says so, I believe it's there. So great.
That's
thanks
cool.
for helping us out. So we're getting to the top of the hour here, Mike. These hours just go by so fast. Do you have some lessons learned?
Real quick see if I can just kind of quickly wrap this up.
Okay.
I'm just quickly showing a couple of the reports that you have with some template. And what I want to point out here is that what you see out of this is depending upon the template you've selected, your reports are going to be different. And that's part of the socialization that you need to do with your executives and with your business stakeholders as well. So what are we trying to do here overall to try to wrap up on this? The key thing here I want to get in the last few minutes is there's just a bunch that we didn't cover, but I think that
I'm going to switch back to the deck here too.
Yeah.
Okay.
If we let me go ahead and unshare my desktop. Okay, good. So what we're going to find is that I think Team System can really, really be a great investment to get your team working together. It takes some commitment of people, so you've got to reach out and work with your executives, work with your business stakeholders, as well as your development organization. But there's a huge amount of value there that can play out with it.
Great. Well, we have listed Mike's blog, which has a large amount of information. We'll get the questions that we're answering. We had some really good questions in today's show, all up on the MSDN Geek Speak blog, which is listed here. We've got Mathune's blog, my blog. We are back to a weekly format for Geek Speak. We're really excited. If you didn't listen in last month, the whole month was on Windows Azure, which is a real popular series. So those are all recorded for download or for podcast download. Next week, we have a completely different topic. We have a new MVP, Jeffrey Emery, coming on talking about virtual Earth development, so that will be a lot of fun. We have the entire February lineup published, and we're about to publish March. So, let us know, too. If there's a certain topic that you'd like to have covered, send us a mail, and we'll get that guest on, and we'll talk about it. So thanks very much to Mathune for co-hosting. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Lynn. Thanks. And Mike, that was a wonderful presentation.
Yes, thank you, Mike. And we'll turn it back over to the producer. And if you have any other questions at this time, put them in the queue and we'll get them answered. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn. If you have any questions for our presenters, go ahead and submit those now by using the Q&A pane, and we'll be getting to those in just a minute. You should all be seeing a survey in your slide area now. If you could take a moment to fill it out before you log off, we do appreciate any feedback you leave for us. All you need to do is follow the links provided to complete the evaluation. And with that, I'm going to hand the floor back over to our presenters to wrap up with the final question.
Okay, it looks like we have no further questions. So thanks again for listening. Hopefully it was a worthwhile show, and we look forward to having you join us next week. Thanks again.
Great. Thanks, Lynn. I'd like to remind everyone to take a moment to fill out the survey prior to exiting the session room. And with that, I'd like to extend a special thank you to our presenters today, Lynn Langett, Mathune Dar, and Mike Simpson. Thank you all for joining us today. You may now disconnect from the audio portion of today's conference.